out to safety.
How do I look? Jack asked Abigail.
Like one of them, she said, except taller and better looking.
Jack smiled. How about me? Wade asked.
You look like one of them, Abigail said.
Guys, we've got a problem, Ian said. There's a soldier headed to Zeus's room. Is anyone else with him? Zeus asked.
No, he's alone. I don't see anyone watching either.
Zeus walked to the door.
Then I'll take him out.
He opened the door and stuck his head out.
Hey, amigo!
The man turned toward him. Zeus reached out his hand.
Got a present for you!
He shot a single bolt, nearly 30 feet, bouncing the man off the wall into the ground. Zeus stepped back in.
He's down.
Time to go,
Austin said, setting aside Taylor's resat.
Wait, what about my resat? Taylor asked.
Here, take mine, Austin said. It can shock people.
She put her arms through its straps.
Thanks.
What does it look like out there? Austin asked Ian.
Surprisingly quiet. It's like everyone's having a siesta break.
Which cell has the prisoners?
He pointed to his left.
Right there. The cell next to us. Left side of the hall.
Zeus, you better come with us, Austin said, in case the convicts come at us like those others did.
You got it.
I'll be your prisoner too, McKenna said.
I'll take Abby, Jack said.
Abigail nodded.
And me,
Taylor said.
No problem, Jack said. I can handle both of you.
Not hardly, Taylor said.
Looks like it's you and me, buddy, Ian said to Wade.
All right, Austin said. Prisoners in front, guards in back. Put your hands behind your backs so you look handcuffed. No one leaves the room until Zeus and I have let the prisoners out.
He turned to Zeus.
Ready?
Let's do this.
They walked out to the cell next to theirs, and Austin unlocked the door. Zeus kicked it open. There were at least 20 prisoners crammed into the room.
Estamos escapando!
Austin shouted.
Sálguense ahorita! ¡Huyen!
The prisoners just stared at Austin, confused at seeing an American in a Peruvian soldier uniform telling them to escape.
Come on!
Austin shouted.
Motín!
They still just stood there.
We haven't time for this, Zeus said. Stay in your cage, you rats.
No, start the fires, Austin said. That's the plan.
Right, Zeus said.
He blasted the mattress with both hands. It burst into flames. The convicts jumped back, then, looking at Zeus in horror, fled the room. Austin, Zeus, and Taylor ran back to Taylor's cell.
Come on! Zeus shouted.
McKenna!
Austin said.
Light the mattresses on fire!
Love to.
Her hand burst into flames and she lit the mattress. Then she and Zeus went to each of the cells, lighting the mattresses until smoke poured out of the cells and filled the hallway. An alarm went off. Austin opened the cell door for the other prisoners, who didn't need any persuading to get out, though they stayed away from Zeus.
Everyone, take their positions! Austin shouted. Taylor, we need them to let us out now!
They walked to the door at the end of the corridor.
¡Abran la puerta!
Austin shouted. Taylor concentrated. Immediately, the door opened. Soldiers rushed into the building with guns and fire extinguishers.
Ian, which way?
Austin shouted.
Follow me!
When they got to the outside door, one of the soldiers pointed a gun at them.
Alto!
The man suddenly collapsed to the ground. A soldier standing behind the fallen man said,
Amigos, this way!
Who are you?
Austin asked.
Apúrate!
The man said, grabbing Austin's arm.
We haven't much time!
Are you with Jaime?
Taylor asked. The man looked confused.
Jaime?
The voice,
Taylor said. He hesitated a moment, then said,
The voice! Si!
Another alarm went off, and outside the fences the soldiers were emerging from their tents.
Please, hurry!
They followed the man over to an idling prisoner transport van. He opened the back doors.
Everyone in! Hurry!
Suddenly there was a huge explosion about 100 yards west of the camp. Men started shouting and 2 sirens went off.
Get in!
The man shouted. When everyone was inside, the man shut the doors behind them, then ran around to the passenger side and climbed in. He shouted to the driver,
Vámonos!
The van pulled forward, needling through the growing crowd of soldiers who had come to fight the fire. They drove up to the first check station, where they were stopped by a guard with a machine gun. He spoke to the driver.
¿A dónde vas? Estamos sacándoles del incendio. Orden del general.
The soldier looked at the teens in the van.
No puedo dejarte ir.
The man in the passenger seat fired something, and the soldier dropped to the ground. Then the man pushed a button on a hand remote, and there was another explosion, this one closer to the jail, taking out 100-foot section of the fence.
¡Vamos!
He shouted to the driver.
Distraction, Austin said. Clever.
The van drove quickly in the opposite direction of hundreds of soldiers who were running toward the jail. Within just a few minutes, they had passed out of the military compound.
We did it, the man said through a speaker box. We got away.
Everyone in back clapped, except Austin, who looked conflicted. Jack punched him in the shoulder.
Lighten up, dude. You and that awesome brain of yours broke us out of there.
Wade also punched Austin in the shoulder.
Yeah, you're the brain, man.
Austin still didn't look happy.
I didn't get us out of there. Those guys did.
He turned to Taylor and frowned.
Why didn't he know Jaime?
Taylor shrugged.
Maybe they don't use their real names.
Austin frowned.
Something doesn't feel right. Can you read their minds?
Taylor looked over at the driver, who was divided from the back by a thick bulletproof plexiglass sheet braced with a metal caging.
I don't know. I'll try.
She put her hand against the metal siding of the van. Austin knocked on the plastic partition between them. The man turned back.
Yes?
Where are we going?
Someplace safe, amigos,
he said.
Someplace very safe.
He turned back toward the front. Taylor looked at Austin with wide eyes.
We've got to get out of here,
she whispered.
Why?
Austin asked.
They're taking us to the Elgin.
Chapter 10 Out of the Frying Pan. The mood in the back of the van changed from relief to terror.
What do we do?
Abigail asked.
Try the back door,
Jack said.
There's no handle, Taylor said. You can only open the door from the outside.
Can you shock them?
Austin asked Zeus.
Not through that plastic screen.
What if I melted through it first?
McKenna said.
If you shock them, they'll crash.
Taylor said.
I'd rather take my chance with a car crash than with Hatch, Zeus said. At least with the crash, I've got a chance of surviving.
Taylor looked back at the men, then knocked on the plastic behind the first man.
Where are you really taking us?
I told you, somewhere safe.
Where is safe?
You know all you need to know, he replied.
Who are you really?
Austin asked again. At first, neither of them answered. Then the driver laughed.
soldiers of fortune.
No, said the other,
underpaid soldiers.
Not anymore, the driver said. Soon we will be sunning on the beaches in Argentina.
You're Elgen scum! Jack shouted.
No.
The man in the passenger seat turned back.
We are not with the Elgen Company, but they pay better than the Peruvian army.
You know they'll kill us, Taylor said.
What they do is not our concern, the driver said. And the Peruvian government will execute you anyway. Your chances are better with the Elgen Company.
You've never met Hatch, Zeus said.
Met what? The man replied.
Manuel,
the driver said, his voice suddenly pitched.
Mire!
In the middle of the road ahead of them was an army tank. Its cannon was pointed directly at them.
That's not good, Austin said. Who is that?
Taylor asked.
Looks like the Peruvian army isn't as dumb as those two think they are.
¿Qué hago?
The driver asked.
No sé. Mire. Pueden reducirnos a cenizas. No van a matar los chicos.
What are they saying?
Taylor asked.
They're trying to figure out what to do about the tank, Austin said.
Suddenly, machine gun fire exploded around them, blowing out the van's tires.
Everyone down! Taylor shouted.
The teens fell to the floor. There was a loud screech as the tires shredded off and the truck's metal rims hit the pavement.
¡Mi madre de Dios!
Shouted the driver.
¡Firme!
The transport veered off the road and everyone bounced around in the back. Bullets tore through the front and side windows of the cab, ripping apart the front of the van. A stray bullet hit Jack in the arm.
Ah! They got Jack! Wade shouted. They got Jack!
Calm down! Jack shouted. It's just a flesh wound!
The van tipped up on two wheels, then slid down a small dirt slope where it crashed into a grove of small trees, tumbling everyone in back. When the motion stopped, everyone was quiet.
Everyone okay?
Jack asked.
I'm okay, Abigail said. Me too, McKenna said. I just hit my head.
I'm okay too, Taylor said. She had a small gash on her forehead, and blood was running down the side of her face.
You're bleeding, Austin said. I noticed, she said, wiping the blood from around her eye.
Austin moved closer to her.
It doesn't look too deep.
Zeus said to Jack,
You okay, buddy?
Yeah, stings a little.
I can help, Abigail said.
She took Jack's arm, and the pain went away.
Thanks, Jack said.
Anytime, she replied.
As they lay there, dozens of Peruvian soldiers surrounded the vehicle. Soldiers pulled open the front door of the van, then dragged the bodies of the traitorous soldiers out of the cab.
Están muertos.
A soldier looked into the window at the youth, then stepped back.
Everyone, come out of the truck, a voice said.
We're locked in, Austin shouted. We can't get out.
Apúrense,
a voice shouted.
Escúchenles antes que revente el combi.
The soldiers swarmed the back of the van.
We will open the door, one shouted. If you run, we shoot.
Should I blast them? Zeus asked.
No, there's too many of them, Taylor said.
And they've got us outgunned, Austin added.
Maybe they're going to shoot us for trying to escape, Wade said.
They have a tank, Austin said. If they wanted us dead, they would have just blown us up. Besides, they probably just think we were kidnapped by those dudes.
The back doors of the van swung open, revealing dozens of guns pointing at them, including two mounted machine guns and a flamethrower.
Can you say overkill? Austin said sardonically.
Come out! One of them shouted in English. One at a time!
Austin breathed out slowly.
Failed again, he said. Michael,
Taylor said, holding her head.
Where are you?
Part 3 Chapter 11 An Electrical Storm. In the Tyrrhenian Sea, the E.S. Ampere.
Are we in agreement?
Chairman Skimma asked. 2 hours earlier, he had called the board together for an emergency meeting. An ominous, dark atmosphere permeated the boardroom. Board Member 11 broke the silence.
I'm not comfortable playing judge and jury, he said. We're voting to execute someone.
Perhaps you'd be more comfortable spending the rest of your life in prison,
Two replied.
If they don't hang you first,
Ten said.
No,
Skimma said, shaking his head.
There is no other option. Hatch must never leave this ship alive.
His gray eyes slowly panned the table.
We must be unanimous as a board. This is no time for dissension.
Then I'll abstain from voting, 11 said.
I will too,
7 said.
As will I, 6 said.
Skimma looked at the three of them with disgust.
I didn't realize the board had cowards on it.
Everyone turned away from the three except Skimma, who stared at them coldly.
So be it,
he finally said.
Let the record show that board members 11, 6, and 7 are irrelevant.
I make a motion that we vote, 2 said.
I second the motion, said 10. Is there any more discussion?
Skimma asked. When there was no response, he said,
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
The room was a chorus of ayes.
Any opposed?
He looked at 11, 6, and 7, who remained silent.
The motion carries.
Skimma's secretary walked into the room. She leaned over and whispered in the chairman's ear. Skimma nodded.
Have we confirmed who's on board?
Yes, sir, she replied. Just the pilot and Dr. Hatch.
Alert security to their arrival,
Skimma said.
Land them.
As she turned, he looked over the board.
We've reached our decision just in time. I've just been informed that Dr. Hatch's transport is landing on the ship.
The Elgen helicopter dropped quickly beneath a low-hanging canopy of black-gray clouds, hovering a moment before settling onto the ship's pitching helipad. Hatch almost threw up. White-knuckle landings on a rocking deck were just another on a long list of reasons for Hatch to dislike their corporate sea base.
We've landed, the pilot said.
Hatch nodded.
So we have.
The pilot shut off the engine, and as the rotor slowed, two armed guards, one tall and lanky, the other short and muscular, approached the helicopter. Dr. Hatch opened the helicopter door and stepped out, looking at the guards with a wry smile.
Now, why would you be holding guns?
Sir, please step away from the craft, the tall guard said.
I asked you a question.
Hatch said sternly.
Please step away from the craft, the guard repeated.
Hatch looked back and forth between them, then said,
As you wish.
The muscular guard walked around Hatch and looked inside the helicopter.
Visual inspection clear, sir,
he barked to the other guard.
Were you expecting someone?
Hatch asked.
We need to check you for weapons, sir. The first guard said. Please put your hands above your head.
Hatch shook his head with annoyance.
Is this really necessary?
Yes, sir.
Hatch complied with the command, and the muscular guard patted him down, then stood back at attention.
He's clean.
Does Chairman Skemmer know you're treating me this way?
These are the chairman's orders, sir, the guard replied.
Hatch nodded.
How unfortunate.
Follow me, please,
the tall guard said. Hatch followed the guard, while the other guard walked behind him, his gun drawn. Skemma's secretary buzzed the chairman as Hatch and the guards entered the waiting room.
They're here, sir.
She nodded to the tall guard, who opened the boardroom door. Hatch stepped past him and into the room. He noticed two more guards inside the room. The board was silent on his entrance.
I see there have been some changes since my last visit, Hatch said, sitting down. Thank you for sending the welcoming committee.
Chairman Skemma, who was seated at the far side of the table, just glared at him, his anger barely contained beneath a veneer of forced civility, like the clattering lid on a boiling pot. Hatch coolly returned his gaze.
You wish to say something?
Dr. Hatch, you were given specific instructions and deadlines to dismantle the biogenesis program. Instead, you flagrantly disobeyed our orders, leading to the destruction of our largest facility, leaving 70% of an entire country out of power and doing irreparable damage to our reputation.
Hatch showed no emotion.
We were attacked by terrorists. How is this my fault?
You were attacked because you failed to obey our order to release the V-Woman!
Skemmer shouted.
Your refusal to do so resulted in the attack!
That's not wholly accurate. The group attacked us for their own political agenda.
Political agenda!
Three laughed.
They're teenagers. Their only political agenda is free internet.
Hatch looked at Three, his eyes dark and fierce.
As I said, they have a political agenda.
Skemmer continued.
The damage done by your impudence has set us back years, if not outright destroyed our chance for short-term success.
Don't be stupid, Hatch replied. Do you really believe that any country will walk away from free electricity? Our plant being shut down was not our fault, but the poor handling of the situation is completely yours. We were attacked by a sophisticated and powerful group of anarchists and terrorists. When they attacked our plant, world sympathy should have been with us, not against us. But instead of invoking public sympathy, you apologized. What was going through your mind? What you did was tantamount to Roosevelt apologizing to the world after Pearl Harbor. Your stupidity turned public sentiment against us.
Hatch looked around the table at the board members.
Really? This is our leader? Our chairman? This is the man we trust with our future?
He turned and faced Skemmer.
You have done enough damage!
Skemmer pounded the table with his fist.
Enough!
Indeed it is,
Hatch said, glaring at him.
You are no longer fit to run this organization.
Skemmer jumped up from his chair.
How dare you!
Hatch also jumped up, simultaneously slamming his fist down on the table.
How dare you! You have led this group from one disastrous decision to the next. Your short-sightedness is exceeded only by your stupidity.
Skemmer was red in the face, his veins bulging from his temples.
Guards,
Take him to the brig.
I'm not done, Hatch said, pointing at Skemmer. It's time the Elgin became who we were meant to become. It's time for a change, but not the one you brought me here for.
Hatch's eyes panned the room as his voice softened.
Yes, I know why you brought me here. You can't fire me. I know too much. I hold each of your lives in my hands. You didn't bring me here to fire me. You brought me here to silence me.
No one spoke.
Don't worry. It's not going to happen. If anyone will be silenced, it will be our illustrious chair.
Guards, take him out of here!
Skemmer shouted.
Now!
The two guards walked up behind Hatch.
Sir, put your hands behind your back, one of them said.
So it begins, Hatch said.
He looked around the room with a confident, dark smile.
Does anyone here, besides me, of course, object to the chairman's scheme to put me down?
He looked back and forth between the group.
Answer carefully. Your decision will hold consequences.
Even in complete failure, you're defiant, Two said.
Hatch looked at her.
You've always shared the chairman's animosity for me. It makes me wonder what else you share.
The woman blanched.
How dare you?
How dare I? You have no idea how much I'm willing to dare.
You're a fool, Two said. We are fortunate to be rid of you.
Don't be too sure, Hatch said. The day is not over yet.
Two chuckled.
Are you so obtuse or arrogant as to think that this board will change their minds?
The day will reveal who is truly obtuse, Hatch said.
And no, I don't believe that you will change your mind, but the less obtuse board members will. And my arrogance is not unfounded. Mark my words, friends. Those who don't support me will live to regret their decision sooner than you imagine.
Seven stood up.
Mr. Chairman, is this treatment of Dr. Hatch really necessary?
I agree, Six added.
Dr. Hatch has provided much to our organization. There wouldn't even be a Star Source initiative if it wasn't for him.
Skemmer looked around the room.
Anyone else disagree with my actions?
He asked softly.
Would you like to resurrect the discussion on Dr. Hatch's reprimand?
11 also raised her hand.
7, 6, and 11,
Skemmer said, looking at the three in disdain.
You are relieved of your board membership and are under house arrest until we decide your fate. Captain, see that there is a guard stationed at each of their rooms.
Yes, sir,
the guard barked back. Skemmer looked around at the rest of the table.
Is there anyone else who wishes to join them?
No one spoke.
Take these fools away,
Skemmer said. As Hatch and his two guards boarded the elevators near the center of the boat, Hatch said to his escorts,
I'll give you one more chance to prove your loyalty to me.
He paused for emphasis.
Not for my sake, but yours.
Shut up!
The first guard shouted.
You're insane!
Hatch smiled.
So be it.
The elevator doors opened onto the bottom level of the ship, and Hatch was marched down a long corridor to the brig. The Ampere's brig consisted of 4 cells, 6 foot by 6 foot, with padded walls and electric locks. Being on the ship's bottom level, the brig was situated less than 70 feet from the engine room, so the cells and the outside corridor were always noisy, reverberating with the sound of the yacht's massive diesel engines. The second guard opened the first cell door and stood to its side.
"Welcome to your new home. Get comfortable. You're going to be here a long, long time."
"I don't think so," Hatch said.
He turned to the first guard, who was still clutching Hatch's arm.
"Are you going to take my cuffs off?"
The guard shoved him into the small cell.
"Maybe tomorrow," he said, "but probably not."
"You don't have tomorrow," Hatch said.
"He's a nutcase," the second guard said.
He slammed the door, which locked with a loud buzz and electric click. Both guards turned to go.
"One more thing," Hatch said after them.
Both guards turned back.
"Let me tell you something that many have learned the hard way."
He leaned toward the bars, and his voice fell to a low, guttural growl.
"I never, ever, ever forget."
"Like an elephant," the first guard said, laughing. "Come on," the second guard said. "Just leave the nut job in his cage."
Suddenly, the corridor lights flickered. Then the lights at the end of the hall went dark.
"Gentlemen," Hatch said, "I believe there's an electrical storm coming."
Both guards drew their weapons, the first a submachine gun, the second a Colt sidearm. Suddenly, the second guard dropped his handgun and began screaming. His face was red, and he was violently shaking his hands in the air.
"My hands! They're burning!"
Then the first guard also threw his gun to the floor and fell to his knees, pulling off his boots.
"My feet!"
The two guns suddenly lifted into the air and flew to the end of the hall. Torsten, Quentin, and Kylie emerged from the darkness, walking toward the brig. They casually walked past the two guards, who were on the ground writhing and screaming with pain. Kylie pulled the electric keys from the second guard's pocket without even bending over, and unlocked the door.
"What took you so long?" Hatch asked.
Chapter 12. The Takeover.
"Get up!"
Quentin shouted at the guards.
"Before Torsten explodes your brains! Then strip to your underwear and get into the cell!"
The second guard stood. With blistered hands, he quickly tore off his clothes.
"Whatever you say, sir."
The first guard pulled off his boots, then just lay there. He looked like he was in shock. Quentin looked down at him.
"You have a problem with my order?"
"No, sir. I can't."
He grimaced.
"My feet."
Quentin looked at the man's feet. They were bright crimson and severely blistered.
"Then crawl in," Torsten said. "Or should I just melt you here?"
"No, sir,"
the guard said. He hurriedly pulled down his slacks, screaming as they brushed against his feet. Then he crawled into the cell, whimpering.
"Both of you on your knees, with your hands on the back wall," Hatch said. "And don't waste my time."
When both guards were against the wall, Hatch shut the cell door behind them.
"Just a few minutes ago, you were both laughing," Hatch said. "What happened? Did you lose your sense of humor?"
Neither guard answered.
"I asked you a question."
"No, sir!"
they shouted in unison. Hatch turned to the second guard.
"What did you call me? A nut job?"
"I'm sorry, sir,"
the second guard said. Hatch turned from the cell.
Not as sorry as you will be. Come on, he said to his youths. Let's go pay a visit to the board.
The four of them walked down the hallway, back toward the elevator. Hatch picked up the guard's pistol, put it in his right pocket, then pulled the satellite phone from his left pocket. He pushed a button, and just seconds later a voice answered.
Engage, Hatch said.
Then he stowed the phone back in his pocket. He turned to Quentin.
Where are Brian and Tara?
They're covering the main floor, Quentin said. I'll let them know we're on our way.
No, have them meet us here, Hatch said.
Yes, sir,
Quentin said. He pulled out his cell phone and dialed a number.
Tara, it's Q. Come down to the first floor. Use the forward elevator.
He returned his phone to his pocket and turned back to Hatch.
They'll be right here.
Less than a minute later, the elevator stopped on the floor. Tara and Brian stepped out.
What's going on up there? Hatch asked.
Everything's calm. I think the board members are still meeting.
Does anyone know you're on board?
Two window washers spotted us, Tara said.
And? Hatch said.
They jumped overboard.
Brian laughed.
Tara made them think the boat was filled with cobras.
He turned to Quentin.
One of them did the most awesome belly flop. It was epic.
Hatch didn't look amused.
Did anyone see them go over?
We don't think so, Tara said. We didn't see anyone else, and we could barely hear them screaming.
All right, listen up. The three board members loyal to me are under house arrest on the second floor. We're going to free them, then pay the board a visit. There are currently 14 guards on board. Four of them, Woodbury, Spafford, Harlan, and Mull, are loyal to me and are awaiting my orders. We've locked two in the brig, and the other eight will need to be neutralized. A helicopter with 20 of our best soldiers is on its way from the Faraday. It will touch down in exactly 28 minutes. Quentin, I need you and Tara to make sure they encounter no resistance on landing. Understood?
Yes, sir,
Quentin said. Tara nodded.
Yes, sir.
Kylie, Brian, and Torsten are with me. We'll take out the three guards on the suite level, then meet up with our four guards on deck.
He turned to Tara.
Did you see any guards on the bridge?
Two.
Hatch looked Tara in the eyes.
Dispose of them.
Yes, sir.
Quentin, take out all communications. I don't want an SOS going out to any other ships in the fleet. Not all of them are loyal to me yet.
Yes, sir. I'll take out the bridge before we get there.
Don't take out any of the controls or radar. We still need to float this tub.
Yes, sir.
Also, take out the video console. I don't want them seeing us on the second floor. I'll give you 5 minutes. Call me after it's down.
Yes, sir.
Go.
Tara and Quentin stepped into the elevator. It was less than 5 minutes later that Hatch's phone rang.
We have the bridge, sir. The consoles are down.
Good. Stay there until I arrive.
He turned back to Torsten and Brian.
Let's end this.
Chapter 13. Mutiny. Inside the boardroom, Skemma looked somberly over the group.
Then it is unanimous, he said. Once we reach open sea, Dr. Hatch will be exterminated.
He burst out in a fit of coughing, then breathed out slowly.
It will be a relief to be free of him.
Two Elgin guards, Spafford and Mull, stood watch outside the boardroom door with their guns drawn. There was a loud beep on Spafford's communicator. He turned to Mull.
It's time.
Mole nodded. He glanced once more down the hallway, and then, together, they opened the boardroom doors and walked in, closing the doors behind them.
"Gentlemen," Skemma said, "you'll have to leave. This meeting is still closed."
The guards leveled their guns at the board members.
"You're all under arrest. Put your hands on top of your heads, now!"
"What are you doing?"
Skemma asked. Two secretly pushed a button under the table.
"I said now!"
Spafford repeated.
"I suggest you drop your weapons," Two said to the guards. "I've alerted the guards."
"Shut up!"
Mole shouted.
"And get on your knees and prepare to meet the Admiral of the Elgen fleet."
"The Admiral?"
Two said.
"Admiral Hatch," Spafford said.
"Have you gone raving mad?"
Skemma said. Then the door opened, and Hatch walked into the room. He was flanked by Quentin and Torsten, and followed by the three disposed board members.
"Guards, subdue him!"
Skemma shouted, pointing at Hatch. Hatch just shook his head.
"Clueless as always," he said. "They don't take orders from you."
He turned to Spafford and Mole.
"Well done, men."
"Your little coup won't work," Two said. "I've alerted the guards. It's just a matter of time before you're back in the brig."
Hatch looked at her for a moment, then said softly,
"You've alerted what guards?"
Just then the boardroom door burst open, and a dozen guards in black uniforms ran into the room. They were led by a squad captain, dressed in purple.
"Those guards," Two said. She turned to the captain. "Thank goodness you're here. Dr. Hatch has gone rogue. Arrest him."
The captain just looked at her, his eyes narrowing in contempt.
"I gave you an order!" she shouted.
"Those aren't ours,"
Skemma said to Two in a low voice.
"You're correct, Skemma," Hatch said, looking more amused than angry. "Which, honestly, I find refreshing, as it's so rare that you're right about anything these days. But I suppose even a broken clock is right twice a day."
"What are you up to, Hatch?"
Skemma said.
"I'm relieving you of your command," Hatch replied.
He turned to the captain. "Secure them."
"Yes, sir."
The captain turned back toward the board table and shouted,
"Everyone stand with their hands behind their backs! Now!"
None of the board obeyed, but looked to Skemma for direction. Skemma stared at Hatch defiantly.
"You were given an order," Hatch said.
No one moved.
"No?" Hatch said. "Okay, then.
Captain Welch, shoot one of them."
"Yes, sir," the guard said.
"Which one?"
"It's your choice."
He turned his gun on Three.
"Wait!"
Skemma said, holding up his hand.
"You don't have to do that. We'll do what you say."
"Indeed you will," Hatch said.
He turned to the captain. "Next time someone hesitates to follow an order, shoot them."
"Yes, sir."
Hatch looked at the board.
"Leadership is such a burden. You know how it is, Skemma. If you threaten to cut off someone's finger for breaking a rule, you're going to have to cut off a few fingers before everyone figures out that you mean what you say. So which one of you is going to be our demonstration? It's your decision. Here's your first opportunity to show us. Everyone, stand up."
Everyone quickly stood.
"Now, sit down."
They sat down.
"Stand up!"
They stood up.
"Now, stand down."
Half of the board sat down, the other half wavered, confused, crouched somewhere in the middle. Everyone looked at Hatch nervously.
"What do you want us to do?" Four said.
Hatch grinned.
"I'm just toying with you," he said. "Sit down."
Everyone sat.
"What's your point, Hatch?"
Skema said. Hatch's grin turned to a scowl.
"My point is, I've listened to you fools for too long. From now until the end of your miserable lives, you will do precisely what I say. Everyone stand."
They all stood.
"Secure them," Hatch said to the captain.
"You heard him," the captain barked. "Everyone put your hands behind your backs. Do it now!"
Everyone obeyed. Two of the soldiers walked around the room, zip-tying the board members' hands together. Suddenly, Ten spun around, attempting to grab the soldier's gun. One of the guards fired an electrode from across the room, dropping Ten to the ground.
"Secure him,"
the captain ordered. Two soldiers grabbed Ten, tied his arms behind his back, tied his feet together, then dragged him away from the table, laying him at Hatch's feet.
"What are your orders, sir?"
the captain asked. Hatch crouched down next to Ten.
"Were my orders too complex for you?"
"You're not going to get away with this," Ten said.
"Of course I will," Hatch said.
"Throw him out,"
Skema said.
"You don't need to do that, Hatch. He's sorry. Aren't you, Ten?"
"I'm most certain of that," Hatch said.
He turned to the captain.
"Open a window for me."
He pointed to the middle panel of the external glass wall.
"That will do."
The captain pointed his submachine gun at the tempered glass and pulled the trigger, ripping out a large section. The smell of gunpowder filled the room.
"There's your exit," Hatch said to Ten. "I hope you're a good swimmer."
Ten was trembling.
"I'm sorry. I'll do whatever you want."
"Will you?" Hatch asked.
"Yes, sir."
"Good. I want you to drown."
Two soldiers dragged Ten over to the hole in the glass, then turned back to Hatch. Hatch nodded. The guards lifted the man and threw him out. The sound of his screaming could be heard until a distant splash ended it.
"Goodbye, Ten," Hatch said.
He turned to the captain.
"Think he can swim with his hands tied behind his back?"
The captain shook his head.
"No, Admiral."
"I don't think so either," Hatch said.
He looked over the rest of the board members.
"As I was telling you, you always have to cut off a few fingers before they get the point. Anyone else care to test my resolve?"
The board members just stared at him fearfully.
"Maybe you do learn. Take over, Captain."
"You will comply with our every word," the captain said. "All of you come to this side of the room and kneel."
Everyone except for Skema hurried to the starboard side of the room next to the glass. The captain walked up to Skema and pulled him out of his chair, forcing him to kneel, then kicked him in the stomach. Skema gasped, then fell to his side, coughing fiercely. Hatch turned back to the three displaced board members, 6, 7, and 11.
"Take your rightful places," he said.
The three expelled board members hurried back to the table. Hatch looked at the other board members.
"Funny how things change. Just an hour ago, you pitied these three. Now you would give anything to be one of them. Wouldn't you? I told you there would be consequences."
He turned and looked at Skema, then slowly walked up to him.
"Living in Peru,
I couldn't help but learn a little about the Incan culture. They were far more advanced than most people realize. They created architectural feats that stump our modern architects. They created massive pyramids that we cannot duplicate. They performed successful brain surgery. True, they had their brutal side and practiced human sacrifice, but here, too, they showed their keen intellect and understanding of the nature of politics. Whenever an Incan king conquered another kingdom, the fallen king was sacrificed in front of his subjects, so there would be no mistaking who was in charge.
Skemma turned pale. Hatch crouched down in front of him.
You didn't really think I was foolish enough to come back here unprepared?
Hatch rose and faced the kneeling board members.
Just another example of your chairman's remarkable short-sightedness.
He turned back to Skemma.
You are relieved of your chairmanship. Be grateful I haven't relieved you of your life.
You'll pay for this, Hatch. This is mutiny.
Admiral Hatch, Hatch said calmly. Of course it's mutiny.
And pay?
Where exactly would I send the check? To whom?
If you're implying that this scenario might somehow end differently than me in charge and you in prison,
you can disabuse yourself of that notion. There is no cavalry. Everyone answers to me. That's the inherent problem with delegation, Skemma. Somewhere along the line, the power gets short-circuited.
Hatch turned to the captain.
Captain, lock them all in the same cell in the brig. Cell one.
Yes, Admiral. He spun around. All of you on your feet! Now!
The members of the board all struggled to their feet.
What are you going to do to us?
Two asked.
You will be given a trial, but don't worry. I will be just as merciful as you planned on being to me.
He turned around.
Captain of the Guard, I want former Chairman Skemma hung upside down by his feet. I want the last of his loyal subjects to know that he's been conquered.
Yes, sir.
Skemma turned white.
Don't do this. You need me.
I need you like I need a kidney stone, Hatch replied. Take him out.
Two soldiers lifted Skemma to his feet and carried him out. Six other guards walked the rest of the board members out. As they exited, Quentin started to laugh, followed by the rest of the teens. Hatch smiled.
That was more amusing than I thought it would be. I'm almost sorry it's over.
Chapter 14 C-10 Information. After the board members had been removed, Hatch walked to the head of the conference room table. He pulled out Skemma's former seat, pausing before sitting.
You have no idea how long I've waited for this. Please allow me the pleasure of savoring this moment.
Hatch took a deep breath, then slowly sat in the chair. A dark smile crossed his face.
It's about time.
Seven began clapping, and she was quickly joined by the others still in the room.
Thank you, Hatch said. You may sit. Quentin and Torsten, let me have you up here, next to me. Quentin at my right, Torsten at my left.
Everyone sat, the former board members in their assigned seats, the teens taking the empty seats closest to Hatch. Hatch stood and walked up to the cabinet against the port wall and opened it, exposing a whiteboard.
The information I am about to share is C-10.
The teens' expressions turned more somber.
Is that understood?
Yes, Admiral,
the teens replied.
Call me sentimental, but you, my electric eagles, may still call me sir.
Yes, sir.
The board members looked at one another. 11 raised his hand.
Yes,
Hatch said.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Admiral, but what is C-10?
Explain C-10, Quentin.
Yes, sir. C-10 is the highest level of L-Gen confidentiality. It means that what we are about to be told may not be repeated outside of Admiral Hatch's presence, even with one another. The penalty for divulging C-10 information is death by torture.
Is that clear enough? Hatch asked.
Yes,
11 said.
Thank you. Let me see the L-Gen salute, Hatch said.
The youth raised their left hands to their temples. The other board members watched, then imitated.
Very well. What I'm about to share with you is called Operation Luau.
Hatch wrote the words on the whiteboard, Operation Luau. He turned back around and tossed the pen on the table.
We need a land base. We need a place to carry out our experiments and build larger EMP weapons, a base far away from prying eyes and invisible to the CIA, KGB, MI5, Mossad, or even any local government. A place with political autonomy. I have found just the place in the South Pacific, midway between Hawaii and Australia, near the islands of Samoa and Fiji, the Polynesian island nation of Tuvalu.
Tuvalu? Brian said.
If you've never heard of Tuvalu, don't worry, neither has anyone else. Which is precisely why it is of interest to us. It is the world's fourth smallest country, behind Vatican City, Nauru, and Monaco, and consists of 3 reef islands and 6 atolls. Unfortunately for them, the islanders declared independence from Britain in the 1970s. This was highly unwise, as they are little more than an island of hula dancers and fish spearers. They have no military, spend no money on defense, and have no means of defending themselves outside of a puny, impotent police force. Their navy consists of a single Pacific-class patrol boat provided by the Australian government for maritime surveillance and fishery patrol. Even the Tesla could blow it out of the water. Tuvalu is facing an energy crisis. Rising ocean levels have damaged 2 of their diesel motor power plants. Unfortunately for them, their 3rd stopped working 2 months ago.
Fate has been kind, 6 said.
Hatch looked at her.
Fate is an excuse for people who are too stupid or too weak to make their own future, he said. We sabotaged the plant. Then 3 weeks later we engaged our Star Source plant, operating on Funafuti Atoll in Vaiaku, the capital of the island nation. We are now in complete control of the country's energy. In preparation of our arrival, we have, as we did in Peru, built a rehabilitation camp for the re-education of the natives. This is my plan. We will gather the L-Gen fleet at the Peruvian port of Callao, where we will load up with supplies and evacuate our troops from our Peruvian Star Source plant, leaving behind a squad of soldiers to guard what's left of the plant. From there it will take us 2 weeks to reach Tuvalu.
How will we reach the island without them knowing? Quentin asked.
Hatch put both hands on the table and leaned forward.
Oh, they know we're coming. But we won't encounter resistance. In fact, they plan to greet us with flowered leis and luaus. This is a diplomatic visit to celebrate the opening of our Star Source plant. We have invited the Tuvalu Prime Minister, Governor-General, and entire Parliament to a celebratory feast. I am assured by our local L-Gen administration that they are most eager to demonstrate to us their gratitude. As we feast,
the Faraday will move into place outside the capital city. Our troops will disembark while the Watt patrols the surrounding oceans. Any vessel trying to